Welcome to Healthcare Du Jour, where we dish up and digest the latest in healthcare. For the next 30 minutes, sit back as we bring you insight, commentary, and discussion on trending topics to the table, all expertly served up by our host and his guests. Healthcare Du Jour is brought to you by High Tech Answers and Healthcare Now Radio, part of the Answers Media Network, and is sponsored by the Law Offices of Myrick O'Connell. Now here is your host, Matt Fisher.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining as we dive into the hottest topics in healthcare. I'm your host, Matt Fisher. On the menu today is Darren Brannon, CEO of Clear Data. Welcome, Darren.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here, Matt.
Yeah, no, thank you for coming on. And before we start diving into our main discussion, do you just want to take a minute to let everyone know who you are and what you do?
Sure. I am CEO of Clear Data. Personally, I grew up in the Silicon Valley tech sector, and I've been in the healthcare industry all through Clear Data's exclusive focus on healthcare for the past 6 years, but I've also have practicing physicians in my family and helped kind of build their family practice and surgery center, all sort of pre-high tech, meaningful use days. And with respect to Clear Data's business, our mission is to help healthcare become better every single day. And we do that by modernizing, protecting healthcare. And what that means is we provide healthcare technology to provider, payer, pharma organizations, helping them move on-premise to a secure healthcare cloud platform and supporting their critical applications and patient data in the cloud, primarily public clouds.
So is it fair to say that, I think as you're saying, that the primary focus you have now is trying to help folks in healthcare with security and making sure that the data is protected?
Yes, it's sort of hand in glove with moving from an on-premise, kind of arcane, in many cases, aged and congested technology, fragmented technology environment, moving that into a sort of modernized cloud environment. And it requires heavy security and compliance wrappers when you do that. So security and compliance is a big part of our business.
Yes. And actually, before we really dive into the security and compliance issues, I'm interested by what you said where it seems like you got brought into healthcare because of family members. So was it always your intention to end up in this industry, or did it just kind of happen by happen chance?
I'm sort of the black sheep in the family. Most of my family has been close to healthcare, and I've been out in Silicon Valley creating fancy technology. They've asked me, I think, since I joined that technology world to bring some of that fancy technology to healthcare to help advance healthcare and actually save lives and resolve some of the medical errors that are a result of fragmented technology. And so it's been tough to figure out when to enter that market, but I think that the 2009 High Tech Act really ignited this profound shift from moving healthcare from a largely paper-based charting world to electronic health records. I think that was the tipping point for myself in the Silicon Valley tech and investor world to dive into this industry, and in fact, it's become the fastest, largest industry transformation in U.S. history from paper to digital in the last 7-8 years. And so that's been my passion now for the last six, almost 7 years.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's definitely been astounding with how quickly the industry has shifted. It's you always hear the adage that healthcare is slow to change, which is arguably a good thing given what's at stake, but it's I think as you're saying, with all the money that was thrown at it from the government programs, the adoption of electronic solutions has been pretty amazing to watch in terms of how quickly it's occurred.
Yeah, one of the interesting implications of that is prior to the 2009 High Tech Act, organizations were largely sort of mandated to keep the data inside their four walls, and then almost overnight, they were mandated to do the opposite through meaningful use, deploying technologies like consumer patient portals and mobile, which has led to millions of people now having access to their data inside these four walls. And they just simply weren't prepared for that type of transformation, and it's just led to a cybersecurity crisis in healthcare.
Yeah, and actually, that's a, you know, bringing up the what I agree with you is likely a cybersecurity crisis. You know, let's dive into that a little bit more, and if you could, you know, kind of explain how you see that transition of how that created more security issues, or maybe created different security issues.
Sure, with the advent of SaaS like products, consumer patient portals. And the need for, you know, deep regulatory compliance, they've just been they've been building security and compliance technologies in a prior realm, which had a much lower budget and a lot less data access from the outside. And so when you have that transformation, you have multiple areas that are exposed from endpoints to networking to the way in which they manage and handle passwords. The whole spectrum of security compliance was underdeveloped and underfunded. And so the current state has been over the last 5 years to assess their environments. And I think some of the things that they've been doing right is they did mandate annual security risk analysis, which does provide an accurate assessment of their people, process, and technology for this new digital realm regarding both HIPAA compliance and some related security elements. And overall, I think that was a great start to get a baseline of where the breach zones may be so that they can begin, you know, building a culture of compliance and security. And we've also seen things like, you know, CISA has been helpful in driving information sharing, and you're starting to see more and more healthcare organizations begin to move things to the cloud, which is inherently more secure than an on-premise environment. So you're seeing, you know, it come from overnight underspending, people and capital constrained, to getting an assessment and a handle on the issues and starting to invest and build in the right layers of compliance and security.
It's
taking a while.
Yes, and how it is. And, but picking on the point you just raised about the risk analysis and, you know, how that can be a spur to help security, are you finding that organizations are taking that seriously enough? Because I feel like I recall that, especially around meaningful use, you know, a couple years after that rolled out, and then they started the audits to make sure that people had actually done what they said they were doing in their attestations, it felt like the risk analysis was one where people would check the box without actually having seriously gone through the process. So, you know, I guess to reiterate the question is, do you see that people are actually taking that seriously and going through the process in a comprehensive way?
Yeah, that's an astute observation, particularly before 2009-10, HIPAA was very much, and I remember back to my father's day of kind of checking the HIPAA box and moving on with business. Over time, particularly over the last 6-7 years, they're realizing there are heavy fines coming down, breach notification requirements. The security risk analysis is now sort of a tool that they can use internally as a requirement to step up and build a threat remediation matrix of where they stand today and have proof that they're making progress over time. And so I think internally that we see that, I think you're correct in that there was a surge during the meaningful use. There was a bit of a fall off after that adoption curve. And now we're seeing it come back. I think it's because of the overall cybersecurity spikes that are happening across the multiple healthcare segments, from whether you're a pharma payer, provider, or a product technology companies. I think that's bringing, we actually offer security risk analysis as a service for that baseline understanding before we move into the cloud and apply security compliance. And we've seen that business over the last, I'd say, 18 months nearly double. So I think the swing is back in play for the SRA to be used as a proper tool internally for assessments and building culture around it.
Yeah, that's very good to hear. And as you're seeing that swing, are you seeing organizations of all sizes, or is there any type of a divide between, you know, say maybe small, medium, or large?
We largely focus on the upper end of the small, medium, large, and enterprise. So the sort of 5, 10 dot practices and below, I don't have great visibility into that. But above that, I think the trends I just outlined are positive trends. They're leaning towards more of spending in that area.
Oh, well, that's definitely good to hear, because it's, you know, my experience, I think, is probably more is definitely in line with yours, where I see a lot more of the larger organizations, but and they seem to take it seriously. I just always have that concern about the small ones, especially as you're saying, kind of that under 10 provider practice, because I think they see it as a there's only so many resources to go around.
Right. Yeah, and that's, you know, I don't know how to solve for that, because it, as I mentioned, in my family, we went from the doing quite well in the 80s and early 90s from a small physician practice, you know, with fair profits and so on, to reimbursements and liability insurance going up, really squeezing that small practice to where things like a $5,000-$10,000 a year annual SRA, unless it's heavily policed or has a strong set of, you know, impactful to-do results from it, it's going to be hard for them to consistently sign up to it. I don't know if, you know, government needs to step in or what needs to happen there, but I do think that is a very important tool to build the baseline for that, for this new digital realm.
Yeah, no, and definitely the point you just raised about, you know, money having to go elsewhere, whether it's rising insurance premiums, thinking about the coverage that the practices themselves need or other areas, you've got that now in combination with just overall reduced reimbursement because of the change to different models and, you know, wanting to reduce overall cost or expenditures within healthcare. So I think those problems are probably only going to get exacerbated as we go on.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
So kind of before we dive into the discussion of what we can do to make sure that money is either spent more wisely or that we can get more money into the security realm, let's think about where you see healthcare doing a good job with cybersecurity right now.
I think, as I stated, that the SRA is really the first step in many regards. So getting a good understanding, then from there you can have that sort of red, yellow, green assessment of where you're soft or light in people, process, and technology. And, you know, we're seeing more and more of an investment increase from was roughly 1-2% historically in security and cybersecurity to 3%. And now it's moving as high as 6-9%. So one of the next big steps is to get sort of awareness internally that this is the problem that's not going to go away. It's going to get worse. It's very expensive. In healthcare, you know, if we all know patient records are almost 2.5 times more valuable than any other records. The cleanup is roughly $3.6 million for a breach, and public announcements of the breach. These are all very, very heavy penalties relative to any other industries. As an example, the finance industry doesn't even have to expose their breach incidences. So in healthcare, I think it's important that they first acknowledge they have a significant problem, begin to build a culture of compliance and security, and then determine how they can increase their budgets, then slice up those budgets to where they're the highest impact issues. Today, if you look at sort of a pie chart, you know, there's six different major categories: hacking, malware, social, regular sort of password error, misuse, physical environment. If you put those into three big categories, you have malicious criminal attacks are roughly 47-50%, system glitch roughly 25%, human error 28%. So they really need to kind of focus initially on that malicious criminal attack environment, make sure that their vulnerability scanning, endpoints, network security, that they have baseline technology and services. And we're seeing more and more healthcare look to outsource that as a way to get up to kind of the baseline, because they do lack budgets and internal proficiency. And there are many companies, Clearday included, that have a specific focus on healthcare and can provide the sort of security, technology, and even managed services around that better, faster, cheaper than they could ever, because we're building those services to apply across the spectrum of healthcare and can acquire kind of thought leadership talent in each of these areas. And so really, you know, having them understand, again, the baseline, adapt the right budgets for it, adapt a culture for it, and then focus on these three categories as resolution areas.
Yeah, for those of you just joining, I'm talking about Darren Brannon from Clear Data, and we're talking about security and healthcare. And Darren, kind of just picking up on what you were just talking about in terms of, you know, those three big buckets to focus on with the malicious attacks, certainly getting a lot of headlines, especially with ransomware attacks. Do you have tips or suggestions for organizations and being able to find a good outsource vendor to be able to help them with those efforts?
Certainly, it's a daunting task. Without question, there are literally a couple thousand security and compliance vendors in healthcare. Even with Clear Data organization, we can't build all that technology, so we have to select third-party vendors, and we have a comprehensive vendor analysis and selection process. And you know, there's multiple areas of concern in security and compliance, from the on-premise, as I mentioned, network endpoints, malware control access, incident response environments. All of these categories require specific technology and services. And so to understand how these technologies, which technologies to select, and then how to bring it all together in sort of a single pane of glass, is oftentimes beyond the budget and sophistication of most healthcare environments, even some of the large to enterprise. And so I think if I were to be in their shoes and think of a checklist first, you know, do you want to build this in-house? Do you have the technical capabilities? Can you stay on top of the technology, which is changing weekly, and on top of the attacks, which is also weekly dynamic? And if the answer is not really, then you should be looking for vendors that solve as many of the technology and services under one roof as possible. So you have cloud service providers. Those that are specific to healthcare, I think, is a meaningful differentiation, because they understand things like HIPAA, chapter and verse, by state, national, and have understanding of how to convert those regulations into the proper level of people, process, and technology, so that if you do get hacked, you know, you have a really good day in court. And you can avoid the fines because you have stepped up to the requirements of the regulations. But in order to do that, you know, you have to have a healthcare focus, deep core competency around security and compliance, and provide ongoing level of managed services that can be tiered, where they can provide some of the security and compliance, take on some of that themselves, or hand over the keys and allow others to expand as the challenge expands and as their business expands.
Yeah,
so those are some of the ideas holistically.
Yeah, no, and thinking about kind of that holistic approach of, you know, trying to evaluate and find the right resources, you know, kind of touching back upon one of the topics we were discussing earlier is having the money available to do that. So where do you think that money should come from? Should it all be driven internally by an organization, or do you think there would be space to have basically a government-driven initiative similar to, as we're talking about, meaningful use, which drove the initial adoption of all this digital technology? Should there be that a tag-along now to have assistance in making sure that the information is secure now that we are into this new electronic age for healthcare?
Yeah, it's a great area of dialogue. I know most, you know, healthcare environments, they're still trying to adopt basic advanced applications like EMR, integration, optimization, mobile apps. They're completely resource constrained. The majority of prospects that we talk to are security and compliance light. They don't have the budgets or folks to help really drive them to the level that they need. Again, resource constrained, both budget and expertise. And, you know, I think if if hospitals would have looked into the future, realizing what the HITECH Act would have done in terms of this ceaseless onslaught of cybercrime on their own, they probably would have thought more deeply about how to solve for this earlier on in terms of building their budgets for it. But they haven't, and they've been blindsided, and the problem seems to be getting worse due to the complexity of the overall IT fragmentation in healthcare and so on. So, you know, could government help do something to promote the gap to solve for this issue? You know, what they did in terms of transforming paper to digital was profound. The Meaningful Use program drove a fantastic digital transformation, and that was largely subsidizing the deployment of EMR. You know, could you have a similar type of program or scenario where they fund a set of defined IT security efforts and implementation of those efforts with some sort of, I don't know, interest-free loans or another possible mechanisms? You know, I think helping fund that environment versus trying to step in and do some of it themselves is probably a much better approach. As we've seen, federal government routinely have their own breach challenges, from the State Department getting hacked to the White House to Department of Defense, CMS, and so on. So it really, you know, I think if there is going to be some help, it needs to be to fund private organizations, both the technology companies as well as the providers. And, you know, we're all on the same side here. You know, we're largely dealing with 50% of these breaches are, you know, criminals. So they help, you know, other industries like TSA and other categories with some funding. So it's an interesting dialogue.
Yeah, no, kind of you're pointing out the fact that it's, you know, the government itself has certainly had its challenges when it comes to being able to secure itself. It would almost seem like, or not seem like, but I feel like one of the initiatives they've been working on is threat intelligence and collaboration. And I think this kind of ties together a lot of what you've been talking about, which is the fact that there are all these threats, and it's hard to do it by yourself. So the more that we can spread information about the issues that are out there, it would seem like that would be beneficial to not just the healthcare industry, but to really everybody.
Yeah, I think that was a good step with the CISA. I think we, you know, that as I stated earlier, one of the things they're doing right is the government has sort of driven a information sharing around the incidences and breach environments, and that's kind of a good step forward in terms of information sharing. Other industries have been doing that for a while, so that's helpful. But the question is, you know, can healthcare step up over the next 5 to 10 years as they completely digitally transform and invest properly in security compliance when it has such a big target on its back, almost 2.5 times more valuable? It's underinvested, and it's just getting more and more complex. And these patient records being exposed and breached are at a tremendous clip. A couple of years ago, it was 1 in 3 records in the U.S. will be exposed or breached at some level. That number's come down, but it's still a profound number. So the question is, you know, can private industry do it on its own in time before there's, you know, this epidemic reaches even bigger crisis level?
No, and I think that's a very important question to ask, and unfortunately probably one that's at the moment impossible to answer. But kind of thinking about that, you know, the as you said, the large target that's on the back of healthcare, and turning that back to a statement you made earlier, which is definitely an accurate one, which is the fact that when a healthcare organization has a breach, you know, hopefully people are familiar that there is, you know, for the most part under HIPAA, the mandate to have to report that breach. That, you know, as you pointed out, isn't necessarily an obligation shared in a lot of other industries, at least under federal law. Do you think that is helping or hindering efforts?
You know, I think initially when it was written, it was to jumpstart the sincere concern in the industry that healthcare was underinvested and needed to move to a more secure and compliance profile. And, you know, when I started 6-7 years ago in this business, there were numbers of 70-80% of providers were out of regular HIPAA compliance from a security perspective. So I think that regulatory requirement to publish breach incidences may be a bit dated and should be reconsidered. And perhaps there's better ways that would make it, you know, less of an inhibitor to the industry.
Yeah, no, that's certainly...
I don't have a solution for it.
Yeah,
I don't have a solution for it.
Yeah, no, that's certainly one to ponder. But, you know, unfortunately, as we start to have to wind our time down already, I just want to kind of pick up, see if we can tie it together a little bit, and to the extent that it's possible, get your views on what you think cybersecurity or security generally will look like in healthcare within the next, say, up to 5 years.
Oh boy, there's going to be tremendous change. Even as I used to say in a startup world, every 3 or 4 months is like a year in our world. We're seeing that sort of accelerated pace of security compliance in a single year, just tremendous transformation. But I'll take a stab at it. I think, you know, skills for cybersecurity will continue to change. So you'll see your cybersecurity folks will have to continue to adopt things like machine learning and artificial intelligence and need to be very agile with their so you'll see folks like DevOps should become more like DevSecOps with a focus on security. So I think there will be transformation of the roles itself in security. And you'll see largely, I think, a shift from protection and prevention to prevention. And you'll be able to stop threats before they happen through things like cognitive and machine learning, artificial intelligence, pattern recognition technology. I think you'll see the development of a different type of SecOps operations center from partial on-site to moving more of that out to the cloud and managed service providers. I think that'll be more of the norm than it is today. So I think those are really the top trends that I think about as we build our business.
Yeah, well, thank you for providing your predictions. And, you know, as I said, believe it or not, we're already out of time. So, you know, we'll definitely have to keep you in mind to have you back as we start to see things, as you said, constantly changing and see where things actually end up going. So, Darren, thank you so much for a great conversation today.
Thank you as well.
Yeah, no, thank you. And thank you to everyone for listening. Keep the dialogue going and connect with me at hashtag HCDEJURE. I'm Matt Fisher. Until next time.